Welcome to Fired Up, hottest sports show in Central Ohio. The show where four sports fans talk sports for the fans. Our topics for this evening are: a record number of fans attend this year's NFL draft, which teams saw their stock rise, and which teams fell flat. UFC 301 live from the marvelous city in Brazil. Teams starting to show some signs of life in the first round of the NHL playoffs. The 150th running of the greatest 2 minutes in sports. KD and the Suns are headed home, checking in on the first round of the NBA playoffs. Your Chief Fire Brigade, Rob Cow.
Thanks, Colton. Good to be here on a Thursday night live from Colton's basement. Yeah, like we said, the NFL draft, what a boom for the city of Detroit. I mean, looked like they did it upright. The weather was good for them. To me, it looked like they had great attendance. I didn't hear official numbers, but just looking at
700,000 people,
wow,
I think, over
looking
the 3 days.
Looking at the crowd on TV that was actually in attendance looked pretty impressive. So, the old saying, offense sells tickets and defense wins championships. The owners must be just wanting to sell tickets, and not so much looking at a championship.
Was that the first 21 picks or something?
23. Offense, 23. Yeah. Well, the first 14 were all offensive picks. The first defender, LeTou, at 15, a defensive edge rusher, was the first defender off the board. But six QBs, 23 offensive players in the first round, no safeties, and no running backs in the first round. So everybody's banking on the, high-flying pass game, I think. So, I got a couple winners, got a couple losers here, but I'll let you guys get a word in here.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, sure. I'll start with what I picked to be my winning team. And to me, this was a case of the rich getting richer. Philadelphia Eagles last season, through the first three quarters of the season, were the best team in all of football. They hit a little injury problems there towards the end of the year, so they didn't finish as well as they had hoped. But, man, the draft in the first round, they pick up cornerback Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo. And then they also then add another cornerback in Cooper DeJean from Iowa, another great corner. And then the fourth round, I think they got a steal on offense, getting the running back Will Shipley out of Clemson. And then even towards the end of the draft, they pick up a guy dubbed Baby Jason Kelce. He's the tight end out of NC State, Dylan McMahon. If he can even be half a Jason Kelce, they got a huge steal there. I mean, the rich just got richer here. Definitely a winning team in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I gotta agree with you, Matt. I had them listed as my big winner. You mentioned, the two guys they took with their, first round and second round, probably the two best corners in this year's draft, or one of the two best corners up there, on most people's draft boards. In my opinion, didn't really have to reach or have to do too much to get them. Just waited patiently and kind of let the chips fall and. This is an Eagles team that's loaded up with talent because, already at the corner position, they got two veterans in Darius Slay and James Bradberry, who are, one of the premier corner duos in the league. And then they add two more guys that young guns to add to the mix. So they're definitely loading up on a position, on the defensive, we talk about offensive side of passing, pass heavy offenses and things like that. Well, with the pass heavy offense, you got to have, pass, heavy defense to be able to, counteract that. So the Eagles definitely loading up on, an important position in today's NFL in cornerback. And, you talk about the versatile guy out of the backfield and Will Shipley, somebody that compared nicely with Saquon Barkley that they picked up in the offseason. They then add, the guy that used to play in Philadelphia and Jeremiah Trotter Sr. that used to play in Philadelphia. They had the son, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. to the mix.
Also a couple jerseys, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. I think also got a steal in round six, not only the center there and Dylan McMahon, but added Johnny Wilson, the wide receiver out of Florida State, A lot of draft experts and whatnot had him as, one of the top receivers in this year's draft class and fell all the way to round six. And, I think they got a heck of a steal there, late in, the draft there. And again, I thought they just did a really nice job again of not, having to jump up or reach for certain guys. I thought that they, just kind of, again, sat back and just let other teams kind of do their thing. And the guys that they wanted kind of fell into their lap, in my opinion. So the Eagles, big winners for me coming out of the draft.
Well, I went a little different direction. I thought maybe I had the Eagles up there, but I went with the Vikings, or I mean the Bears, believe it or not. Okay. You know, Caleb Williams, number one guy, and then they turn around at number nine and get Adunze, you know, up from the Huskies. And also, not through the draft, but they add a free agent wide receiver from the Chargers and Keenan Allen. Mm-hmm. It looks like the Bears are really going after some offensive firepower right. here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, and it seems like they have a plan in place to try to get to it, you know, a team that just – couldn't score a lot the last couple of years, hasn't been able to score a lot of points. You right. know, I questioned their wisdom when they got rid of Justin Fields by not really giving him much of a chance. But you know, just I think they kind of made up for it here. And as my honorable mention winner, I went with the Steelers. So after signing Russell Wilson and Justin Fields to their quarterback room, they really went out and got some help. They signed offensive tackle Troy Fatura, I wrote that down wrong. But anyway, and then center Zach Frazier and guard Mason McCormick. So I think the Steelers are looking to upgrade their offensive prowess too, with, you know, getting these guys in the quarterback room and then going out and getting them some protection to, you know, try to boost that offense in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, for every winner, everybody that did well, there's got to be equally, you know, the same amount of people that didn't do so well. Right. So, fellas, who do you think kind of fell flat here in the draft?
I gotta say, what is Atlanta doing?
I think,
I got the Falcons. You know, they just signed Kirk Cousins for $180 million,
4-year deal, right.
$100 million of it guaranteed,
fully guaranteed.
Yep. And then as their eighth pick, they take Michael Penix, who I think is a good quarterback, right. even, but I think there was better ones available at number eight.
Mm-hmm.
And why would you do that? And then Cousins comes out already. He's miffed.
Yeah. Right.
Already, yeah. He's got his panties in a bunch. Right. They didn't say anything to him like literally minutes before they picked, you know, Michael Penix. So I don't know, I guess to me, I wouldn't have went, and that's not the way I'd have went.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, quarterback play in Atlanta has been not good, and yeah. I thought they was a definite upgrade when they signed Kirk Cousins, but mm-hmm. Maybe they're looking long term.
Yeah, the logic I heard has been you take a quarterback when you want one, not when you need one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think their point is, you know, if Cousins, if he makes it three out of these four, because he is getting older too,
right.
So you know, then you got your successor ready to go, and they think with Cousins, they're going to be a better team.
Yeah.
They're not going to get the draft that high again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. I think you got to help the now. I don't think you can think about the future that way. I don't know how often that works out. But then again, all these guys we're basing on what we think they're going to do.
Right.
And how many times have we seen surefire draft picks flame out?
Right.
So yeah. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I got the Falcons as my big loser, and no offense to Michael Penix, I think the guy's a heck of a quarterback. Obviously, he has no control. The Falcons picked him. That's who he's got to go to. He's got, you know, no choice in the matter. To me, I see it. You know, Cousins is 36 years old, so it's not crazy for the Falcons to start thinking, you know, somewhat longer term, but you don't, in my opinion, you don't use a top 10 pick on a guy for a longer term solution. This is not an Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre type of situation or a Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love type situation. Like, Cousins still has some good seasons left in him.
I guess the only other thing for the Falcons, did they learn a little more about Cousins' Achilles?
Right.
And is it maybe not healing as fast as they thought? Are they going to need somebody to start this season?
Yeah, maybe, you know, but it just, to me, I think they, with a top 10 pick, in my opinion, you don't spend a top 10 pick for a guy to sit on the bench.
Absolutely.
And so at what point now do we see, you know, when does Michael Penix get his shot? And now,
well, any adversity,
you know, what have you done for Kirk Cousins?
Michael Penix already 20, like 26.
Yeah, he's 24, 26. 20, yeah.
25, 26.
Yeah. Right. So this is not,
so he sits behind Cousins for a couple years. He's already
30 some years.
Close to 30.
Pushing 30 before he gets a starting job, which, you know, I mean, it saves wear and tear, but I mean,
yeah, I just, I think you don't use a top 10 pick on a guy that you're going to, you know, sit behind somebody for 3 or 4 years. I mean, you use the top 10 picks to put butts in seats and get him on the field as soon as you can. Because
and I don't see what they did beyond Michael Penix to sell tickets either.
I mean, I thought that they did well. I mean, after, you know, Michael Penix, they really addressed really the problem on their team is their defense. But I think that they could have gotten a top 10 defensive player, obviously, with their eighth pick.
Defensive end who could have wrecked
havoc. That really could have made a impact. Not to say that these guys in these later rounds won't play, you know, contribution, but.
Well, remember, they had their choice because there wasn't a defender off the board until 14.
You got the pick of the litter of who you want. You get your guy at that point. And, yeah, it just seems to me, again, just a little bit of a head scratcher there in Atlanta. Obviously, coming in with a new head coach, new quarterback, you know, it's probably not the way the Atlanta fans wanted the new season to get things kicked off here. So,
I mean, my losing team, I picked the Cleveland Browns in this one. They didn't have a first round pick. In the second round, they took a high upside guy, but I still think it was a little early in defensive tackle, Michael Hall. And the Browns don't really need defensive line help. Mm-hmm. They've had a pretty good defensive line the last few years. So, you know, I'm not sure that was a big spot of need for them and taking that with their first overall pick in the second round. I think they could have done a little better than they did. I picked the Browns as my losing team.
Well, I kind of had an honorable mention in the losers column, too. I went with the Vegas Raiders. They still have no answer long-term at the quarterback spot. I mean,
they're putting all their eggs in one basket on Aiden O'Connell
or Gardner Minshew. And I'm like, wow. I mean, long term, I don't think either one of those guys is the answer. So, you know, they tried to trade down to get a better shot at a quarterback. Weren't able to do that. And I think their Brock Bowers, the tight end they picked out of Georgia, was a reasonable pick. But then, you know, then they just kept passing quarterbacks all through the second, third, fourth, fifth round, and there was still guys available. I defensively, I think they got better. They got one of the best steals in the draft, Tommy Eichenberg, in the fifth round at pick 148. And then they picked up, you know, Troy Taylor, safety out of Air Force. I think defensively they got better, but the quarterback position, man, I think they laid an egg. I think the Raiders laid an egg.
So do we think the Patriots messed up? Because I heard they had two fantastic offers to move up to three, and they let them both go by because they took their guy, Drake May.
Included multiple first-round picks.
I mean, I heard that some, just super, super fantastic deals.
Yeah, three or four first-round picks from both Minnesota and the Raiders were in the mix there. But I think the
– like we said earlier, it's like it's
– I guess
I think I take one more bad year, get three or four first-round future picks. I mean, what's one more bad year, you know? I mean,
I guess.
You got all that capital to really make
– I guess probably from a new coach perspective, it's like, I'm probably only going to get maybe 3 years here. You know, I got to try to do something here because, well, and maybe not even 3 years. I mean, in today's NFL, some coaches don't even make it through the season. So it's like, I got to try to win for the now somewhat. I agree. You know, collect those draft picks and, you know, see what you can do. But I think with a new head coach, it's like, I'm on the hot seat. The day after I got, you know, hired, I'm already on the hot seat. So it's like I gotta put something together and have some semblance of a team out there, you know, based on how the Patriots have, you know, really declined ever since, you know, kind of the Brady Belichick, you know, thing has gone sideways or whatever. You know, the Patriots just haven't been the same, especially at the quarterback position. So we shall see. Obviously, we got, you know, a handful of months before, you know, the NFL kicks things off. But, you know, we'll see how everything shakes out. But, a lot of teams improve themselves in the draft and, you know, some other teams that had some real head scratchers. So we'll see how these, you know, batch of new rookies play out in the NFL. And, you know,
quarterback heavy. Right. We'll see how they all pan out.
Right. Obviously.
Some earlier than later, probably. I mean, you know, I think you never want to think you're going to draft a kid and he's going to come in and make an immediate difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just the learning curve,
right.
You know, the speed of the game. But, you know, there might be some young kids thrown to the wolves pretty early.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, next on our list here is UFC 301 in Rio. Colton, you want to get us started here?
Yeah. Like Dad said, you know, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, you know, Saturday, May 4th. You know, really not much of a card to really talk about on this one. I mean, from top to bottom, it's kind of a stinker, to be honest. But it's gonna be tough to follow up from, you know, UFC 300, where it seemed like every fight was, you know, pretty solid. So it was obviously gonna be tough to follow up that you know fight card. But you know, we got one title fight, you know, in the mix here. You got number 10 ranked Steven Ercig taking on the champion Alexander Pantoja, 27-5. Pantoja is, and Ercig comes in at 12-1 into this fight. You
this
know
is for the flyweight,
yeah, flyweight title,
115 pounds,
yeah, 115 to 125 pounders.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're all trying to, you know, be at that max weight of 125 coming into the fight. But, you know, this is something that I didn't realize, you know, as much as I've, you know, watched some of the UFC, but this flyweight division is actually fairly new to the UFC. Mm. It's only been around for about a little over a decade now that they've added it in as an official, you know, division in the UFC. So, you know, when, you know, they first started kind of this division, you know, the first eight years that it existed, there were only two guys that held the 8 years held the belt. In Demetrius Johnson and Henry Cejudo were the two guys. But ever since then, it's been kind of a revolving door of, you know, this guy, then this guy, you know, whatever. So, you know, Pantoja has kind of, you know, brought a little bit of a, I don't know, some consistency back to this, you know, division. He comes into this fight, you know, on a five fight win streak. But, you know, don't underestimate the Australian there and Steven, you know, Steven Ercig. You know, he's only actually been a UFC fighter for less than a year.
I guess it's his fourth official UFC fight.
But if you go back and look at the guys that he's fought,
right,
it's really not been up to the level, mm-hmm. I don't think, mm-hmm. Of what, you know, Alexandre has fought. So I think, you know, Vegas likes the Brazilian, mm-hmm. and I gotta concur.
Yeah,
just for the level of experience.
It's definitely going to be experience versus, you know, kind of meteoric rise at this point, because, you know, by the time Ercig, you know, somewhat joined the UFC back in 2016, Pantoja had already fought 18 times by the time, you know, Ercig was, you know, getting his start or whatever. So definitely, you know, kind of a guy that's super experienced in the UFC versus a guy that has had some, you know, had some battles and, you know, has been challenged and, you know, fought well so far, but, you know, this is his first real big shot. We'll see what he does under the bright lights there in Brazil. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, Pantoja going to have the hometown crowd behind him. So it's going to be, definitely, you know, his toughest fight to debut or, you know, so far in the UFC.
Yeah. And just looking at the way Pantoja wins his fights, he's a little more well-rounded than Ercig. You got Pantoja at 8 knockouts, 10 submissions, 9 just by decision, where Ercig's only got 2 knockouts, 6 submissions, 4 decisions. So, you know, I feel like Pantoja can win multiple ways, where I think Ercig, he's going to want to get you to the ground and he's going to want to try to submit you or hopefully go the distance.
Yeah.
I just think having those extra opportunities is going to be the big thing in the favor of Pantoja.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, outside of, you know, that title fight, you know, one other fight I did have kind of, you know, just to mention here is the bantamweight fight, mm-hmm. that's right before the flyweight, you know,
kind
event.
Kind of the co-main.
Yeah, between Jose Aldo and Jonathan Martinez.
Aldo returning from retirement.
Right, yeah, a guy that was
– his comeback fight.
Right, has been on the top, you know, has been, you know, at the top of his game, or, you know, has held, you know, some belts in different divisions. You know, one of the legendary, a guy that's been, you know, was inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame, and, you know, it was 2 years ago that he, you know, lost his final fight before he decided to, you know, call it what we thought, call it quits. after fighting for 18 years in the sport. You know, took some time off, you know, dabbled a little bit in boxing, and then, you know, said, "Yeah, heck with it, I'm coming back. It's time for me. I got that itch again to come back." And, you know, he said that, you know, I want to try to make a run at the bantamweight title at this point. And, you know, no better way to get it started than, you know, right here. Another Brazilian guy that gets to fight, you know, in his home, you know, hometown or home country.
Yeah, obviously hometown, plus him being, you know, an elder, kind of the elder states.
Right,
he's definitely
right.
Going to have the crowd.
Right. Fan favorite, you know.
Coming and that, back from retirement, got a lot of things going on. I think if Martinez can kind of weather that surge of energy mm-hmm. that Aldo's going to get from, you know, the crowd and, right. I got Jonathan Martinez in an upset.
Yeah, this is a guy that, you know, Martinez does come into this fight with a, you know, on a 6-fight win streak coming into this one. So, you know, this is not going to be a walk in the park, in my opinion, for Jose Aldo. But it's also, you know, I think Aldo, not only, you know, just for his own reputation or whatever that he's fighting for, but he's kind of betting on himself because this is his final fight on his current contract with the UFC. He didn't renew his contract prior to this fight. So he's obviously betting on himself because if he can, you know, bring some fireworks and, you know, take out this guy, you know, he's looking to use that as leverage mm-hmm. to get a big new deal. But if he, you know, comes out flat and, you know, whatever, this could be it. You know, he may have to try to, you know, make his way in a different, you know, MMA, you know, event or MMA, you know, program or organization. So we'll see. That was, you know, kind of an interesting thing that, you know, he's betting on himself coming into this fight. So,
yeah, well, I'm with your dad on this one. I like Martinez to win in an upset. Aldo, there's a reason he retired. Mm-hmm. He was 5-5 in his last 10 fights. Yeah. He wasn't the guy he used to be. Yeah. I like the younger guy in Martinez mm-hmm. to get the win here and send Aldo back in.
right. Back to the retirement home.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, yeah, that's all we got then, you know, for
so
UFC.
So we got on to the NHL then,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Well, you know, for the Battle of Florida, Tampa Bay came out on top, which I think we all kind of predicted.
Florida came out on top.
Eliminated by Florida. I mean, which, you know, we all kind of predicted, even though Tampa Bay has kind of been a perennial playoff team 10 of the last 11 years, and in that span won a couple championships. But, you know, game 5, pretty precise, have got beat 6-1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, so. It's kind of – I thought the Lightning would put up a better fight than what they did.
I thought this would be
6 or 7 game series, but man, they after the first 2 games where it was kind of close, the Lightning never really were. I mean, they obviously game 4 they you know got a big 1-6-3. Win or whatever, but outside of that, the other games they just kind of you know weren't in it. I mean, they were out of it before it was you know even started, but. You know, the Panthers got, you know, great play from their center and Alexander Barkov. I mean, he scored 2 goals, had 3 assists and had 14 shots on goal in this 5-game series. And I just feel like, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning just, the other guys on the other side just didn't have as big of an impact as, you know, some of the stars for Florida in this one. And, you know, obviously you can look at the goalie play was the difference in this one for Florida. And, you know, obviously, Sergei Bobrovsky for Florida. You know, it's always questionable what you're going to get when it comes playoff time from Sergei, but at least in this series, he was able to, you know, play well.
Yeah. And the other half of that Atlantic division, you got, Boston playing tonight, actually, game 6 against Toronto. Boston's up 3-2, you know, gutsy win for Toronto that last game, eking out a 2-1 win
without their best player in Austin Matthews. So,
Boston better not let Toronto keep hanging around though, because I mean, they're one of those teams that have quality players. If Boston wants to move
on. I still got Boston winning this overall. Mm-hmm. You know, I think maybe Toronto, you know, coming off that, you know,
big overtime win,
they might. You know,
a little let down.
And I think Boston wins this tonight.
All right. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Obviously, you know, Toronto able to win one on the road in Boston in game 5 and, you know, game 6 get to go back to Toronto. I'm not sure what the health status of Austin Matthews. Obviously, they need him no matter what the case might be to, you know, try to win this series outright. You know, so, but I like Toronto's chances at home, you know, in this game six, force a game seven, you know, two really good teams, two teams that obviously are staples in the playoffs and, you know, a great battle that we've gotten here so far. But yeah, I think the Bruins, you know, need to take care of business here in game six, but, you know,
it's been so up and down this season, though. Yeah. It's hard to say what Boston team really shows up from a night-to-night basis.
Right. Well, and I told you, you know, if Toronto was going to have any chance in this series, they had to keep it close because Boston is not very good when it comes to close games. They got 15 overtime losses, you know, in the regular season and almost third most in the NHL. So it's one of those things that, if Toronto can keep it close, keep it within a goal, whatever, they got a chance in this one because the Bruins just they either, you know, blow you out or they lose in a close one kind of deal. So they, you know, for Toronto to have a chance, they got to keep it close here. So
well, the Metro Division already wrapped up. You know, the Caps got swept by the Rangers and Carolina put out the other team from New York, the Islanders, 4-1. So not much to talk about there. We move on to. Unless you guys got some comments on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it'd be a big surprise from the Rangers.
Either,
and the Rangers,
either
Capital C.
Capital just 2-0. It's time to blow that thing up.
Yeah, I mean, the big story in that one, I mean, Alex Ovechkin, you know, obviously one of the best players in hockey of all time. Zero goals, zero assists, and only had 5 shots on goal. I mean, it just, you ain't going to win any series when one of your best players has basically no stats to show, you know, on the stat sheet whatsoever. And I don't know if that's a testament to how well the Rangers defense played
or how bad this
Washington team really is. But, you know, in the same, you know, story for Carolina and New York, you know, the Islanders able to pull out game 4 in double overtime. But outside of that, it was Carolina the whole way. Islanders just couldn't convert on some shots. I mean, they got plenty of them, but just, you know, weren't able to put them in the goal and make it matter. So the Hurricanes, you know, moving on here.
All right, moving to the Central. Dallas is up. Well, Colorado's already put out Winnipeg. That already put out the Jets 4-1, and we still got the Dallas up 3-2. Vegas goes up 2-0, you know, and I'm like, because I picked this upset. This was my upset pick was Vegas over Dallas, and they lose 3 straight. So, you know, what can they do, you know, on Friday? I don't know. It doesn't look good. I think anytime you give up, you know, a 2-0 lead and let a team beat you 3 games straight, I think that's
you start reeling like that. It's real tough to recover.
Hard to get back. Mm-hmm. Hard to get back. And, you know, against a team that, you know, really is a better team, I think, overall anyway. So I think it's going to be an uphill climb. I got Dallas winning this in 6.
Yeah, I feel like those first 2 games kind of woke a sleeping giant. Mm-hmm. I mean, since then, I mean, Dallas is scoring at will pretty much against Las Vegas. If Vegas can't slow that down, good night.
I think it's going to be interesting, obviously game 6 going back to Vegas here, and you know, we know what the atmosphere is like in Vegas, you know, obviously a newer team to the NHL, and you know, not a city that you would think is, you know, a hockey town per se, but you know, the city has really embraced the, you know, the hockey. And you know, obviously the Golden Knights have given them a lot to cheer for, absolutely, you know, with the, you know, success that they've had in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, I think game 6, you know, the Golden Knights, you know, right the ship. We go 7 games in this one, but, you know, ultimately I think the Stars do get the win in game 7, and, you know, put the defending, you know, Stanley Cup champions out of it in the first round. But it's going to be an exciting series. And I think it comes down to goalie play in this one. You know, Dallas first 2 games, Their goalie in Jake Oettinger, who was one of the best goalies in the regular season, looked, you know, mediocre in the first 2 games, but the last, you know, 3 games has really, you know, turned around, really played well. I think that's the difference for this Dallas Stars team. I think he's finally figured it out. I think they right the ship, and this goes 7 games by, like, the Stars to get the win.
I got the same prediction in the Pacific. I got, you know, Vancouver's up 3-2 on Nashville going back to Music City. I got Nashville, you know, getting this win at home and tying it up, but the Canucks winning this thing overall in game 7. I just think there's just too much there, and you know, I think maybe, like I said, Nashville gets that boost coming back home. But overall, I got Vancouver taking this series. And, you know, the other one's already over. The Oilers, you know, took L.A. out 4-1. So, you know, but on all three of these games, well, there's the game, Boston game tonight, and the other game's on Friday. So, you know, you'll be able to watch a lot of hockey that, you know, decision games here going forward if you're a big hockey fan.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, not much of a surprise, Edmonton taking out L.A. there. Right. I mean, we thought, you know, maybe the Kings had a little bit of glimpse of hope, you know, winning game two in Edmonton, you know, but took overtime to win it. And after that, it was, three games straight for the Oilers and, you know, beat them in pretty convincing fashion. And, again, just too much offense on this Edmonton. You know, L.A. just doesn't have the firepower to keep up. So they were going to have to rely on their defense to, you know.
And really, they tried that.
They did. But, you know, it's can only keep the Oilers down for so long. And to do it in a seven-game series, it's tough. You know, like I said,
Game four is probably their best chance to lose 1-0.
Right. Yeah. You know, you play a one game series, okay, it's anybody's game at that point. But, you know, in a seven game series with an Oilers team that shoots the puck like they do and scores the way that they do, I mean, unless you have a absolute stellar defense, good luck. So I don't think, too big of a surprise there. But this Canucks series is, you know, it's playing out to be an interesting one. You know, the wild card team in Nashville's, you know, given the Canucks all they can handle here. You know, obviously, like Dad said, going back to Nashville, you know, I think the Canucks can pull it off in game six. You know, they got, a team that's relatively new to the playoffs here within the last, you know, several years here, a Predators team that's obviously got some experience over the Canucks, but I think the Canucks can get it done on the road and win, you know, close out the series. We'll see what happens.
Well, we're going to take a real quick commercial break here, pay the bills. Stick with us. Don't worry. We'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by Podbean. Podbean is the easiest way to create your own podcast. We use Podbean to host Fired Up. Download the free Podbean podcast app to start, record, and publish your very own podcast in minutes. Podbean provides everything you need to run your podcast, and you can record and publish episodes directly from the app on your phone. Download the free Podbean app today. That's Podbean. Head on over to Podbean at www.podbean.com and use the code PODCAST21 for your first 30 days of podcast hosting for free. Check it out.
Okay, we're back. Kentucky Derby news. 150th running this Saturday. Post time, 6:57 p.m. Don't miss it because it's over in less than 2 minutes. So, you know, it's kind of a top and bottom field here. You know, you got like three horses and then everybody else. It looks like really only two horses and then everybody else. But, you know, Fierceness right now is the odds-on favorite, 5-2. He's got John Velasquez as his jockey that has three wins in the Derby. Trainer Todd Fletcher, two wins at the Derby. Got a lot going. The only thing that's going against Fierceness right now is he's never won back-to-back races, believe it or not. He's just coming off a big 13.5 length win at the Florida Derby.
Smokes.
Yeah.
He could have jogged home.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, he could have walked backwards to the moonwalk across there. But, you know, and the second best horse right now, odds-wise, Sierra Leone. So, you know, they're calling it kind of a two-horse race. But I tell you what, anything can happen in this race.
We've seen 50-1 shots come in and win all over this thing.
80-1, you know, a couple of years ago.
And the weather, you know, it's kind of iffy right now. They're talking about some rain early and then maybe clearing up and getting really warm. Maybe a shower, you know, towards evening time. But, you know, I think this is, to me, one of the best spectacles in sports. I mean, it's even if you're not a horse racing fan,
you know nothing about horse racing, right?
Right. You don't know anything. This thing is just the pageantry and it's just something that one of those things that is on the bucket list that you got to go to.
Absolutely. About, you know, temperature wise, you know, roughly just under 80 degrees, about 78 degrees, you know, very mild wind and, He talked about that, you know, chance of rain, but yeah, it looks like, you know, early on in the morning, going to be a little bit of a, you know, a shower or a sprinkle here and there. So hopefully by the time we, you know, get to Derby time, the track will be dried up, or, you know, pretty close to being dried up. But you know, mile and a quarter in this one, you know, one of the longer, you know, longer races, obviously the first leg of the Triple Crown here. So, you know, we get things started, you know, in that Triple Crown series. You know, to me, it's, you know, interesting. The 10 and 11 post, we got two horses from the Japanese tour that are racing. And
who never seemed to
yeah,
fare well.
We've never had, or I saw something that, yeah, two Japanese horses has never won the Derby. So, and both of them, you know, number 10 at TO Password coming in at 30-1 odds. And then Forever Young at 10-1 odds. So obviously Vegas doesn't give them much of a chance either. So
true, nice positions for themselves, though. It seems like in this race, those inner positions, mm-hmm. one through four or so,
yep.
don't seem to fare as well either. So that doesn't speak well for Sierra Leone.
Right, right.
Second favorite got the two spot. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a chance he could get boxed in and not be able to run his race the way he wants to.
Absolutely, yeah. They consider the number one post, which is, you know, held by Doorknock this year, as the worst possible draw you can have. You know, so far in the runnings of this, you know, Kentucky Derby, they've only had one winner that's ever come out of the number one spot. So, you know, pretty tough, obviously, like Matt mentioned, because of that, you know, closeness to the inner rail. Yeah. Early on in the race, they get pinched and, you know, whatever, and, you know, they fall towards the back. But, you know, one thing to look out for, you know, something that, you know, watch during the race. So kind of in the past, you know, 8 or 9 runnings of this, you know, Kentucky Derby, the horse that's won this thing has been no worse than third going, you know, after the first half mile of the race. So somewhat of that first, you know, half mile, whoever's kind of first, second, and third, that's probably going to be somewhere where your winners are is, you know, coming out of the, who gets the best start somewhat of out of the gate there. So, you know, something just to watch. Obviously doesn't do anything for you betting wise, because you're betting on a horse before we even start the race. But,
and you know, depending upon how the bets go, these odds could adjust a little bit as time goes forward.
Right.
You know,
right.
Still got 2 full days of betting.
Right. So, you know, you may want to just consider that when you're looking at horses that are good kind of out of the gate a little bit to, you know, kind of consider, yeah, you know, maybe look at this horse or whatever. But with it being that mile and a quarter, you can't only just be so good out of the start. You got to have the endurance too. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, a good mixture.
A little bit left for that final push.
Right. Yeah. You get a good mixture on this, you know, on this Kentucky Derby, Churchill Downs track here. So we'll see what happens, but yeah, gonna be exciting stuff. But yeah, it's kind of a different field than maybe what we've seen in the past, where it's been maybe a little bit of a mixed bag. But yeah, this one seems like it's a 2-horse race, and you know, but again, anything can happen in these 2 minutes that we see. But yeah, the odds are definitely pretty wide as far as got your two favorites and then everybody else from there. So there could be, you know, some potential, be some money, you know, some money to be, you know, some serious money to be made here because of the wide odds that we have for these different horses.
You pick one of these long shots and they come in. I mean,
absolutely. So we're gonna see what happens, but you know, I'll definitely be tuning in. You know, like I said, it's you turn it on and it's over in no time. Yeah. So it
why not?
Yeah, you got nothing to do for, you know, nothing better to do for two minutes.
All right, very good. On to the NBA. The West is almost done.
All right, the East is still trying to figure it out.
OKC sweeps the Pelicans. T-Wolves sweep the Suns. And Nuggets dump LA 4-1. You know, the only series left out there is Dallas up on the Clips 3-2. You know, Luka, what a gutsy performance. Sore knee, not feeling good.
Right.
Comes out.
His quote unquote flu game, baby.
Right. You know, puts up 35. And you could tell, I watched the first part of this game. These late games are tough for me, but I watched the, you know, probably third of this game through all through into the second quarter, and you could tell he was not feeling good. But you know, gutting it out. And to me, some of these other guys got to take a page from his book. You know, we'll get into this when we talk about the East. But come on, it's it's the freaking playoffs. Right. You might not get back here again.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, he made mention of, I mean, that knee is at a point that he said, like, if this was the regular season, I wouldn't be playing. Exactly. But this is the playoffs. I know I gotta, you know, I gotta play. So
I don't know what you guys, how far you want to go into the West here, since it's all other than this game. But
yeah,
you know, to me, I got to look at the Bucks and the Pacers, and we keep saying, oh, Giannis and Lillard are a question. Well, if you're questionable, get your butt off the bench and get in there and play.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's like, come on. You know, and that game starts at 6:30 tonight. But
right.
let's finish up in the West here before I get on my tirade about
these. Yeah, we'll start with Oklahoma City, obviously sweeping the Pelicans. I mean, I don't think it would have been any different had Zion really played in this series. I still think the Thunder would have won the series. Yeah. I think it would have been closer.
New Orleans might have got a win.
Right, so. Right. Yeah. But to me, the Thunder put the rest of the West on notice that this team is legit. I mean, this is obviously a young team that doesn't have, you know, a ton of, you know, star power, but just a lot of young players that can play basketball and
play well together.
Right, right. And obviously, yeah, taking out the Pelicans four games to nothing, you know, moving on and, you know, waiting to see who they play. But yeah, they're definitely looking good through the first round here, you know, in the playoffs. And, you know, same for the Nuggets. Again, not a surprise to me. No. I think this Nuggets team is the kryptonite for this Lakers team. And one player in particular, and that's Jamal Murray, right, who in two games in that series, hit two game winners to take out the Lakers.
Taking over for Robert Horry as big shot Bob.
Right, right. And so, you know, obviously they move on.
But it's LeBron's competitive spirit over with, because in this series they got down 3-0, and he says, it's just basketball.
Right.
Who says that in a competitor in the playoffs?
Right.
Kobe Bryant would never say, it's just basketball. Right. Michael Jordan would never say, it's just basketball.
Right, yeah.
But I don't know what that's all about or where his head's at, but it's not the same LeBron early in his career.
Right. It's just ironic, because the next game, you know, game four, he comes out and has a fantastic game, and the Lakers, you know, win the only game that they win in the series. So it's like, obviously it's not just basketball, man, because you just went off and had, you know, your best game of the series. Yeah, right. So, you know, just, awfully ironic that, you know, he says that. But I think the biggest surprise, I mean, this Clippers-Mavericks series, I think, has played out kind of how we thought. I mean, before all of this kind of got kicked off, I said, that series is going to be the best of all of these in the West. But I think the biggest surprise for me is the Timberwolves sweeping the Suns four games to nothing. And not just sweeping, I mean, dominating. Straight out dominating the Suns. I mean, the Suns never looked like they were ever in it. Yeah. And I don't know. To me, is KD the curse at this point? Right. I mean, we go in this vicious cycle where he goes to a new team, they get all these players, the team sucks. He moves on to a new team. They bring in more players. The team sucks. Whatever. It's like, when at some point, you know, are they going to, you know, let's try something else.
Right. You know, it's funny. Lip readers were saying, Durant was saying to Karl Anthony Towns, you got room for one more. He was talking about maybe trying to get himself over there next year.
Jeez, it's funny how this, you know, how the NBA works now and in today's NBA. But
guys cutting deals in the playoffs.
You know, hats off to this Timberwolves team. Like I said, they played well. Anthony Edwards, you know, a rising star and really put his mark on the playoffs so far in the first round. Obviously, they get another tall task in Denver, who they'll be playing next. You know,
size wise, they match up well.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that, you know, can hang with Denver, but you know, definitely going to have their hands full against the defending NBA champions. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously the Suns come in there with a ton of playoff experience and just, you know, overall experience. Mm-hmm. But this Nuggets team is a different animal. Yeah. So Minnesota's definitely going to have their hands full, but man, what a series they started out with.
Yeah, and back to the Clippers real quick. Yeah. James Harden's kind of doing James Harden things that he does in the playoffs. Right. He'll come out and he'll have a spectacular game or two, and then when they need him the most, moments, he's nowhere to be found.
Right,
when the bright lights are on, he seems to
to fade away. Yeah. And you know, obviously they need him because with Kawhi not being able to go and, you know, dealing with the knee issue or whatever, I mean, they got to get all the help they can get. Obviously, Dallas has all the star power there and Luka and Kyrie, and they've played well. It seems like when Luka's having somewhat of a down night, you know, Kyrie's, you know, stepping up and, you know, playing well and, you know, vice versa. So it really has.
Kyrie's still one of the best guys to go into the basket.
Oh, yeah. Handles the ball better than anybody in the NBA. And
unstoppable.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he
puts his head down and
goes.
So
yeah.
Who do you like coming out of that then?
Obviously, being a Mavericks fan, I can't pick against it. But I honestly, this is a Mavericks team that has been not only one of the best teams in the West, but one of the best teams in the NBA since the trade deadline.
Yeah.
I picked the Mavericks before this, you know, before this series started. I just think the Clippers, without Kawhi, they're just done. Yeah,
I said, Harden doesn't show up in these moments.
Now, game six, going back to Dallas in game six. You know, Clippers,
I think they take it in game six.
I think
the only thing that gives them a shot is if for some reason Luka's knee acts up and
he's not able
to
go.
Yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, I like the Mavericks to get it done and you know, take on the Thunder in the next round.
All right, so on to the East. Then the only one that's over out there is the Celtics over the Heat, which I don't think surprised anybody.
I think the biggest surprise was not a sweep.
What a dominance. They only allowed the Heat over 100 points one game. That was the only game the Heat won. I think, you know, obviously the Heat feeling it with Jimmy Buckets not being in there, but I don't think it'd have been any different.
I think it would have been a little bit more competitive,
held the Heat to, you know, like I said, the one game they scored 111 points and all the other ones.
It took a phenomenal effort.
Point games, I think, an 88-point game and a 94-point game, if memory serves me right. Yep. But, I mean, just you know, not only the offensive, but the defense that the Celtics are showing.
Yeah, I think
the Celtics have got to be hoping that the Cleveland-Orlando goes seven because that way they can rest. Porzingis can get back to being healthy again.
Yeah, I don't think the Celtics win the NBA title without Porzingis. Yes. You know, I think that they can still – make it out of the East at this point, but you know, I think they're going to have a tough time.
The Nuggets or the T-Wolves or who you get out of the West, they're going to need his size.
They're going to need his size and versatility that he has. But yeah, no surprise. I think to me, like I said, the biggest surprise is that the Celtics didn't sweep this series. But you know, we're in control the entire way.
Without
Jimmy Butler, where do the points come for this Heat team? A team that even with Jimmy Butler doesn't score the basketball very much. So where does offense come from when he can't go? So then we got the Knicks, or who do you want to go to next?
Yeah, Philly and the Knicks. Yeah. Philly's up 3-2 right now.
The
Knicks are up 3-2. Yep. But Bogdanovich is done.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you know, how big an impact does that have?
Yep.
I like Philly to come back and pull this out. I really do. I still think that they got something that they want to prove here that they can get on to the, you know, deeper into the playoffs. And I think they got this out and come back on the Knicks and take these next two games.
I think if the Knicks just keep pushing the pace, pushing the tempo, I like their chances with Embiid still being a little hobbled. He's playing well, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. But he's clearly doing it,
you know, not 100%. Mm-hmm. And I think if they can push the pace, make him work up and down the court, I think it's going to catch up to him before the series is over.
Yeah.
I think New York wins in seven.
Yeah. I think, I had the Knicks in seven games before this series got kicked off. Obviously game six back in Philly, but you know, it's interesting, you know, Embiid made some comments that the Knicks fans have taken over even Philadelphia, you know, was kind of upset.
They changed the ticketing policy
Yeah, it was kind of
keep the Knicks fans out.
Kind of upset that, you know, the Knicks fans overtook Philly. You know, seemed like the Knicks had the hometown crowd even in Philadelphia. So we'll see what game six brings. But
yeah, you either let that get in your head or you use that as fuel.
Right,
you
know? Right. Absolutely.
The fact that he's talking about it sounds like got in his head.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
To me, competitive spirit, I use that as fuel,
you
know,
some others, it bothers them or it gets to them. But you know, I like this Knicks team. I mean, Jalen Brunson for the Knicks is playing phenomenal, been, you know, a staple ever since he left Dallas. And you know, I wish he never would have left Dallas, but you know, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, went to New York and he's been, you know, showing the NBA that he truly could be a number one guy, or, you know, the guy on a team, and, you know, not in somebody else's shadow. But yeah, it just seems like this Knicks team, you know, with all the injuries that they dealt with Julius Randle and now Bogdanovich, and, you know, some of the other guys that they, you know, picked up in the trade deadline that have been in and out of the lineup, they've still found a way to just win games. I think the resiliency from this Knicks team, I think, is going to be the difference in this one. This Philadelphia team, man, it always seems like, again, you talk about James Harden. Yeah. Well, this Philadelphia team has a black cloud over them, or a dark cloud over them, where things get tight. You know, it's the game's on the line, you know, series on the line.
Nobody steps up.
They falter. And so, you know, and not to say that the Knicks are any better at that, but, you know, I think the Knicks get it done. I do think the Philadelphia will get a win tonight. We force game seven, but ultimately I think the Knicks get a huge win in front of their hometown crowd in Madison Square Garden.
How bad is that Randle injury?
He's done for the whole playoffs.
I knew Bogdanovich was out for the playoffs. Yep. I wasn't sure if Randle had any shot coming back.
Nope, he's out.
In the third series there in the East, you got the Pacers up 3-2 on the Milwaukee Bucks, and this was, you know, a game that's getting ready to kick off here in just, you know, 10, 15 minutes or whatever. But, again, I alluded to this earlier. These guys got to – I'm sorry.
They got to play. Yeah. I mean, for the Bucks to have a chance, I mean
– Yeah, they're two in best
game,
players.
What was it, game four, I think it was, where, you know, Lillard didn't play. Obviously, Giannis hasn't played at all in this series.
They're lucky they didn't get
Chris swept. Middleton got injured during that game.
Yeah.
And then – one of their other, you know, decent players, Bobby Porter, got thrown out of the game in the first quarter. Like, do they have anybody left?
It's their starting lineup.
Yeah, Doc Rivers is going to have to suit up at this point, you know, with all the people that are gone. You know, obviously a gutsy performance in game five in Milwaukee. But, you know, going, you know, back to, you know, Indiana here in game six with the series, you know, on the line. And there are rumors or talks that, you know, Giannis is potentially going to, you know, suit up in this one. I mean, they got to have him. I mean,
get out there.
You got to. I mean, the Pacers are the worst team in the NBA at guarding the paint. Your biggest guy that is not playing, you got to get him out there somehow. Even at 50%, I think Giannis can still dominate this series.
Right.
You got to get the guy out there.
Absolutely.
To give the Bucks a chance.
If they don't, then Milwaukee's going home tonight.
Absolutely. Yep.
I agree with you, Matt. These guys. Jan, I think both of them have to play. Mm-hmm. I think these young guys that have kind of carried them through, they're looking to these elder, you know, players, these so-called superstars on their team for, you know, gut this thing out, man. Get out there and, you know, show your spirit, show your toughness, show your steel or whatever. So if they don't play, they're done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the Bucks can't pull this out.
Right.
All right, the last one, the Cavs up 3-2 on the Magic. You know, I didn't think this series was going to be as much fun to watch as what it has been, but it's really been some really good ball games. Mm-hmm. But I like the Cavs to pull this out. But to me, when I watch these two teams play, the Cavs just play with so much energy. These, you know, these
two guys young team,
that nobody's
teams.
Heard of. Uh-huh. Don't realize they're not supposed to be as good as they're playing. Right? I mean, they're just out there giving it 100%.
Having fun. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just having fun and playing ball. So I like that energy going forward. And I look for the Cavs to finish this in game six.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, tough, obviously, going to Orlando, where the Cavs got absolutely decimated both games in Orlando. But, you know, before this series started, I had the Cavs in seven games. I think the Magic get a win tonight, but go back to Cleveland. I think Cleveland gets a much-needed win, a much-needed series win, you know, for this Cleveland team. But, man, this Magic team is looking like a team to look out for going forward in the East. Both teams very similar style of play, very similar players on the court at any one time. Mm-hmm. Just a great matchup. You know, I said it. Both the 4-5 matchups, both in the East and the West, I thought were going to be the best of the two series,
and they have
lived up to that hype. We'll see what happens. You know, Game Six tomorrow night for the Cavs and the Magic, and then if we do go Game Seven, it will be Sunday. Yeah. You know that we'll get the Game Seven.
You know, I guess I'm kind of the opposite of both of you. I think if Orlando wins Game Six, this goes Game Seven. I like Orlando's chances to win the series just because. Yeah. the Cavs have been too inconsistent. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then, you know, they did pull that close one out at home.
They weren't playing great in that game. Yeah, they were up big and almost gave it all away.
So,
yeah.
You know, just the inconsistency. Yeah. I think if Orlando forces a game seven, it's going to be tight. Yeah, the momentum's going to be there. Right. I think Orlando wins if this thing goes seven.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, I still like the Celtics coming out of the East.
Yeah.
Like I said, that combination of offense and, you know, kind of that just overall game, just I think.
The best team, overall team.
The rest of the East is too beat up to give the Celtics.
Right.
I think that's – and I still like the Nuggets coming out of the West. As good as OKC played, I don't think the level of competition against the Pelicans was there. Not that L.A. put up much of a fight to the Nuggets, but I still like Denver coming out of the West.
Yeah, in the West, I think – you know, the Mavericks really play up to their potential like they have, you know, in this series against the Clippers. I mean, I think they can give the Nuggets a run for their money in the West. I mean, ultimately, I think the Nuggets are, again, the team to beat in the Western Conference, not only because you got Minnesota and Oklahoma City, again, two teams that played really well, have great pieces, but just the playoff experience, when does that play, you know, come into a play here? The Nuggets just, too much, again, a great team on both ends of the court. And can get contributions from more than just one guy, you know, a team that has a lot of guys that can do a lot of things really, really well for Denver.
All right. Well, I think that's the show for tonight, man. We really appreciate you folks listening. And, you know, it's been fun, and we'll see how these playoffs in the NHL and the NBA, you know, and at some point we got to start talking about baseball too.
We'll get it in there.
There's some exciting teams out there right now playing the Boys of Summer right now. So
thanks for listening to Fired Up with your hosts, Colton Cal,
Chief Rob Cal,
Matt Cordes.
We hope you enjoyed our episode this week. And, you know, if you want to hear other topics for future episodes, or, you know, you just got a burning sports question, you know, feel free to reach out to us on our different social medias. You can find us over on Instagram if you search for Fired Up_podcast, or you can find us over on Facebook if you search for Fired Up, Sports Podcast. And as always, you can head over to our website at www.firedup1.podbean.com, where you can find all of our past episodes and, you know, just a little bit of information about the show. And as always, you can find this episode, all of our past episodes, on pretty much any podcast platform you can think of. So Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora. So all the big players, you can find our show. So appreciate y'all listening. And as always,
stay fired up.